Is it coming through? All right.
Town run over and beginning the visit with Debbie this Sunday afternoon, the 24th of November, 74. Channel 1 over and beginning of the visit with Debbie this Sunday afternoon, 24th of November, 74.
Oh.
Your,
my trip. Yes, it was just yesterday. It was, well, they asked me to come to lunch. Marie Pierre. And they,
and Ruffin.
And, well, he was there when I got there about 10 of 12. And, or 10 after 12. They told me to come at 12. And that was because the night before I'd taken them, we go on Fridays together to this little French table. We go and speak French.
Don't tell me.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you have succumbed, Debbie.
What do you mean I've succumbed? Well, I go, it's just on Friday afternoons after work.
I see what that test is, the tape. That's not your voice direct, it's your voice on the tape that comes through.
Yeah.
This new machine got that.
Oh.
Got that feature. The old one, you see, all I could test is whether or not your voice is coming through.
Yeah.
Now I can test whether or not it's on tape. That's a little bit safer, you know.
Well, every Friday. We go to speak French every Friday.
Yeah.
So it's just a little thing. We meet after work, and there's some graduate students in French, and I take Marie and Pierre, which is more than most of them have ever seen before, because they're all studying to get their PhDs in French, but they've never seen a real live French person.
Yeah.
Or talk to them. So I take Marie and Pierre, and they all sit around and talk French, and we don't talk about too much. Usually all we talk about is the different kinds of vocabulary words in French and English, what you call something in French and then what you call it in English and that sort of thing. But it's good practice. I mean, I get a chance to speak French too, and that's all you need is the time. And so anyway, they said, come to lunch tomorrow. So I said, that would be nice, and I'd come. And come at noon. So I was
Saturday,
yesterday. And I was a little bit late. Got there about 10 after, and as I came in, Marie was in the kitchen working. She didn't have her shoes on, and her hair was all sort of sticking to her face because she was hot. And she said that Dr. Ruffin Jones was coming too, and she hoped that was all right. And I said, oh, well, it was just fine. She said that his wife was gone, and that he comes every Saturday and takes them to Publix so they can do grocery shopping, and they'd ask him to stay for lunch. So I said that was fine, and they were bringing the meal. He and Pierre were bringing the meat and bringing everything else. And
oh, it wasn't at the restaurant.
Oh, no. She cooked it. She cooked there, and believe me, she cooked. She stayed in the kitchen the whole time while we ate. That's what happens if you eat
French
food.
Oh, this was at her place.
Yes, and that's what happens, too. That's, if you're going to eat French food, one person has to be willing to do all the cooking. Because French food, you eat the minute it's ready. You can't fix it ahead and eat it. And so it's a French meal always puts somebody in the position of being the servant or the cook. They can't really be part of the meal because they have to be out in the kitchen. Well, it's Marie in this case. She's the one that does the cooking.
Well, so you need to drop in there.
To make
party.
Make a party, that's right. But they're so careful about everything. Like she was fixing a fruit salad when I got there, and I helped her do it, just cut up the fruit. But she had bowls to put it in, and the bowls had ice in them to chill them before she put the salad in. Now, it never occurred to me to chill the bowl first, but I mean, she also heats the plates before she puts the fruit on it. I mean, that's the kind of ice in the bowls and heating the plate, warming the plate, is just going sort of a step beyond in your reverence for food, I think. I mean, so anyway, we had a rice salad that she'd fixed. A big thing, like a big bowl of rice salad with tomatoes and olives.
I've never heard of rice salad.
Oh, that's salad niçoise. That we ate that in Nice all the time. It's a specialty of Nice.
Oh.
And
you never mentioned it.
Well, I don't know why. It's all it is rice cooked, tuna fish. You have to have tuna fish and olives to tomatoes. Sometimes they put anchovies or fishy things in, and they mix it all up with a vinaigrette and put it in lettuce, and you eat it. And
I can't imagine.
It's delicious.
What would rice do for it?
It makes it like a tuna salad, only it isn't mostly tuna fish.
Oh,
it's mostly rice instead of mostly tuna fish. It's a solid salad.
You see, what the Chinese system is, you see, is rice is your staple. That's mostly what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of the stuff, you don't eat meat just to eat meat. You eat it for the seasoning.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's sort of the idea of this, too, because there's not enough tuna fish in it to matter. Then we had take off those plates, and she didn't even get to eat hers because she was cooking the dinner, which was potatoes and steak. Pierre had come back with a steak that, honest to God, it was this big. It was half the size of a cow that he'd come back with. And he and Dr. Ruffin Jones had picked it out together. And Dr. Ruffin Jones was talking, I got him talking about the various the benefits of different kinds of steak. He said that when he'd walked in, Maria said she wanted an entrecote. And he said, I knew what that was, but I didn't know what it was in English. He said, I didn't know what kind of steak she was that she wanted. So he said, I figured a sirloin steak always tastes pretty good. And I said, sure does. I haven't eaten a sirloin steak in 6 months. I haven't either. And then they cleared off those plates, and you have cheese. And meanwhile, Dr. Ruffin Jones was getting a little full, I think, because that was a lot of food. We had a whole bowl of rice, and then that's enough right there. The bowl of rice was enough, and then we had steak and potatoes, and plus we're drinking wine. Pierre came in with a half gallon of Chianti and a half gallon of Parti Burgundy, which is the brand name of one of the Gallo wines. And he held them like this over the table and said, which one shall we start with? We'll finish with the other one. And they pour a healthy glass of wine, guy. They have a glass of wine. The glass, like this, and he'll fill it up to here with wine.
Never heard of anything like it.
Well, it's a lot of wine. So then we brought on, she brought on the cheese, and we had cheese and bread and finished the wine. And then she brought in the fruit salad, which is a whole bowl of fruit this big, and I brought them because we'd gone to a bake sale that morning, so I took them a little loaf of banana bread. So they had a whole loaf of banana bread and these bowls of fruit. Well, Dr. Ruffin Jones was kept leaning back farther and farther and farther, and his chair was getting so full, and he kept saying, "You don't call this lunch, do you?" And Marie'd say, "It's a French lunch," because it's 4 or 5 courses by the time you sit down and have coffee afterwards, too. Well, it took us till 3 o'clock to recover. We all sat around and just leaning back in the chairs, drinking our coffee, trying to recover from all this food. And Dr. Ruffington left. He had to make up an exam, I think. And so Marie and Pierre wanted to go Christmas shopping. And I told them that I'd take them out to the mall because they don't have a car. They can't, you know, get out there. And so we went to the mall, and we started shopping. And I said, we parked the car and got out, and I said, well, now, did you have any idea, what would you like to get? And they said, oh, well, you're the chauffeur. You just take us around. So it was like when we went to buy the television. I didn't know anything about television, so Pierre wanted to get a book for his father about Florida. So I said, well, why don't we just go to the bookstore first, and then we can just walk all around. So we went to the bookstore, and Pierre said, there's one little problem. I have to get this book for my father, but he doesn't read English. So it has to have a lot of pictures and no words. And so I said, well, we ought to be able to find one. And we went down and looked in the travel section, travel books, and there were a lot of books on Florida. They were all page after page after page of text and no pictures, and that wouldn't do. You know, the wildflowers in Florida or something else in Florida. This wouldn't do. So as we were leaving, I just happened to look on the table. There's always a table in the front of every bookstore that's books on sale that are very expensive picture books. They can't sell for $25, so they mark them down to a price that you can pay and sell them. And there were some books on Florida with pictures. So they bought one of those. And then we just worked our way around. They were chattering in French the whole time, and they they'd find something that they liked. They wanted to buy funny things. Marie has a brother and a sister, a brother-in-law and sister-in-law. So for the four of them, they wanted to buy funny things. And they kept saying everything was rigolo, which makes me laugh even to think about it, because it's such a funny-sounding word. It makes you laugh saying it. It's French. It just means funny. Something that makes you laugh is rigolo.
It's not French word, is it?
Well, it's either French or Italian.
Yes.
Maybe it's
but
Italian.
They use it.
They use it all the time. And so
had you heard it before?
Oh,
the
yes.
Crowd?
In not with, well, they use it every now and then, but I heard it a lot in France. They use it a lot in France. Anything that makes you laugh, that is funny, makes you laugh, is rigolo. And so they bought these posters in one of the stores of tennis players. One's an elephant playing tennis, and the other is an old tortoise playing tennis, and the tennis ball's hitting him in the stomach and bouncing out. And Marie said that her brother and sister-in-law played tennis. I was never quite sure who they were buying for. That's why when we got back afterwards, it was 7:30 by the time we got through, but I made them take everything out of the bags and tell me who they got them for, what they got them for. Because I couldn't keep it straight while we were shopping. We went to Ma's Brothers and we bought towels. We ended up in Sears, and they got they got wild colored undershorts for her brother-in-law with funny flowers on them and everything, which I'm sure aren't going to fit because they didn't know what size to get. They couldn't. The sizes are so different from European sizes to American sizes, and they didn't know how tall he was or how big his waist was or anything. So I know they're not going to fit. But anyway, they got them. And then Marie wanted to get slippers, bedroom slippers for her sister. Well, she didn't know what size to get for her sister either. So she was going to try them on because she said that her sister's size is just a little bit smaller than her foot, and she'd try them on. Well, she got the shoe man had every pair of blue slippers that they had in the shoe department in Sears out on the having her try them on. There must have been 10 pair out, and I kept saying, you know, they're from France and they want to send some over to France and they're not sure of the size. Oh, he'd say, well, just try these, and he had them all out. He was nice. I kept saying, well, you're really a magician. You keep finding more pairs of blue slippers. They had to be blue. She wouldn't have any color but blue. They had plenty of red and pink and yellow and every other color, but no, she had those blues. Well, at 7:30, it was dark, mm-hmm. and we were so exhausted. I was so exhausted I could hardly drive the car because it's tiring to shop, to go shopping with somebody, I think.
About an hour is a lot.
Shopping is tiring, even if you're doing it yourself, but if you're just following somebody else around while they shop, it's exhausting. So I was really tired, and we got back, and I decided I'd have to know what everybody got. So I said, well, what did you buy for everybody? Well, then they started taking them out. We all got excited again, taking everything out and looking at it. They bought these towels. Apparently, towels and sheets are much cheaper here than they are in France. So that's why they got them for their parents. And then the kind of towel that they got, they were white with a little monogram on them, and they got the monogram for each parent. So I just said, well, what are their names? Well, that got them into their parents, and they started talking about their parents and talking about the fact that her father's name is Leopold, but in the north of France, you have four given names because you get names for both grandparents, and you get names for somebody else, maybe a saint, and then you get your own name. So it's the fourth name. His name is Jacques-Louis Denis Leopold. And Leopold is his name, but he's got all these other names, too. And the same with Pierre's father. And I never heard of that before. I never knew that at all. And in the south of France, they all just had one name, or maybe two. Some of them had a middle name, but they never had four. Marie's got about four names, too. She's Marie-Pierre Therese something-something. All these names. Plus, the names remind me, every time we bought anything, they'd have to write a check, and we'd go through every time with the French passport for the French. It wasn't even a passport. If it had been a passport, that would have been better. It was a carte d'identité, which is just an identity card, and so it's got all this French written all over it. Every person, Miles Brothers, Sears, the bookstore, everywhere. You know, we'd have to go through explaining what this was and spell out what they should copy down off of it. And they're really, Marie and Pierre really have a very good sense of humor, because in one place in Sears, the woman said, "Oh, well, I can't even read this." And then I explained what she was supposed to copy down, and she copied it down, and she looked at Marie and she said, "How tall are you?" And Marie looked at her and she said, "Now, how tall are you?" And so I said, "She wants to know how tall you are." And Marie told her, you know, they figured it out from meters to inches and feet, and she said, and she was 5'6", however tall she is. I don't know how tall she is. And the woman was writing it down, and Marie said to me under her breath, "Do you think she wants to know when my mother was born?" I said, "Well, at least when your father was born." And I told them the night before, I told them that I was going to Chicago to see my sister for Thanksgiving. And they thought about it a little while, and Pierre said, "Chicago's a long way, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah, it's up on the Great Lakes." And he thought about it a little while and said, "Do you think you could bring me back a gangster?" It's really, I hand it to him. Maybe. Pretty good. So we got, looking through all the presents, got us back into the family. And then they brought out all the pictures. I had seen their wedding pictures. Faye and I saw their wedding pictures in the book, but they had a stack like this that weren't in the book, that were rejects, that they couldn't put in the book. And so we went through all of them. And every one, they'd stop and explain who was in it. And then, see, I could match them to the presents. I could match them up. Like the brother that they got the tennis poster for is skinny. He's 6'2", which is not much in America, but in France it's immense. And he only weighs 150 pounds, which is skinny. He's 6'2". That's really thin. And Marie said he's so thin that when he has to buy a wristwatch, a band for his wristwatch, he has to go into the children's department, the little girls, and buy a child's bracelet, because his wrists are so small, he's so skinny. And so it's doubly funny that they got these posters of elephants playing tennis, because he's so skinny. But I thought, well, it's interesting to do something like that, and yet you're always, at the same time, you're detached from it. That's what we were saying. You're always trying to look at it while you're doing it, which means that you're never really doing it if you're always looking at it. There's always a detachment. But it means that you get as close as you can get to what's really happening if you're looking at it all the time. And that's what I was saying about the books, the fiction, that Hemingway book. He tried to write about the trip he took, and he said in the beginning of the book, his little preface was, "I'm trying to write about a trip. Everything that happened is actual, and I'm not trying to write fiction. It comes out like fiction because that's what he writes." But what he's trying to do is use, he's looking back on it. He's not doing it as it happened. It's not a journal or something that he records as it's happening, but it's something that he looks back on and just uses what happened on the trip, on the hunting safari, to the Green Hills of Africa, and tries to let that be the fiction. And that's, it's just carrying it another step further if you do it as it's happening, rather than waiting and doing it later.
How do you work out, for instance, in the book?
Well,
I got so I can't eat without getting crumbs all over it.
I don't have the book in front of me, and I haven't looked at it for a while, but he doesn't all of the, as looking back on something, he ends the book with saying, I'll write a book sometime and put Pop, the guide, the one that takes him on the safari, I'll put him in a book. That's how I'll get, I'll remember him enough to put him in a book. And it's just, they hunt different animals. It's strictly the hunt, except, as we talked about it in the class, every different animal that he hunts, there's enough fiction in it so that he, the hunter, grows every time he hunts another animal. And he's always trying to get the ultimate animal, which is the kudu. He's trying to shoot a kudu. And to shoot a kudu is the best possible thing that you can get. And it's never really made clear why, because the kudu is just an antelope. But everything about the kudu is wonderful, and they hunt a lot of other animals, that it doesn't mean anything to shoot them. And they get no satisfaction out of it, and it's not a clean kill or anything. But when the kudu, hunting the kudu, he knows it's going to be a clean kill. And it's terribly, I hated the book, because I hated reading about shooting animals. I didn't like it. But I admire. I could see what he was doing or what he was trying to do. If you got beyond Hemingway shooting animals or Hemingway pounding his chest and saying what a fine man Hemingway was, you could see what he was trying to do. That he was trying to use the experience of the hunt. And it came out as fiction. But still, that's what he was trying to do. Use a real thing, a real experience, reality, whatever you want to call it, experience, and write a book about it.
You mean all those episodes of hunting each animal?
They all happened, or so he says, they all happened.
But that would make it episodic.
It's not episodic exactly, though, because or at least I remember it rather as being progressive. He's progressing toward hunting the kudu.
You take the idea.
Yes.
He strings a different hunts on the idea.
That's right. And every animal that he hunts, he's hunting with the idea of eventually getting a kudu, and every new country that they go into, they're looking for the kudu, trying to get the best animal, and he does. He hunts the kudu, and shoots them, and you think, this is the finale. He shot his kudu, but it's not the end. He goes out after he's shot the kudu and shoots another animal, and shoots it badly, shoots it so badly that he has to kill it, he has to shoot it 6 more times, because he shoots its leg off and doesn't kill it cleanly. And so you wonder, you know, why, I don't know why he did that. When we talked about the book, Dr. Bredahl likened it to his writing, that sometimes he would write and it would be, he'd say it the right way one time, and then other times it would take him a whole book and he'd never say it the right way. He'd go around shooting the legs out from under it all the time and never say it the right way, but he knew how to do it the right way. He could do it the right way. But that's what he said.
Well, now, in your experience yesterday, are you going to frame the little steps and episodes on something?
Well, you could string it on the family, I think, because, well, the shopping expedition on the family, the meal beforehand is, and there's just lots I could say about a French meal. Everything about it is special. I mean, it's not the meal, it's the whole way that French people live. If you take the meal as just the example of it, It's how they live.
It's something special.
Everything about it is special. Everything. The way they put the forks on the table, the way they put the bread on the table and get crumbs all over the table. It's everything about it. It's the same in every family.
Is that the way you related that to me just now? With the idea that something, that there's always something special?
I think so. That's what I was trying to do.
Oh, you were?
Sure, with the idea that she chilled the bowls with ice.
Something special.
That's something special. She heated the plates. She was always out laboring away in the kitchen while we ate.
What about the rice?
She didn't even eat her rice. She didn't have time. She'd already made that ahead anyway. So she just put it
in
the bowl.
What about the rice salad? What's special about that?
It just tastes different. I don't know what's special about it. Well, we don't make rice salad.
But you had that in mind as you were.
Yes, as I was saying it. I'd have to think about why that's special.
Mm-hmm. So then, the experience is as close as you can get to reality, to France, you might
mm-hmm.
say, in this case. And then in the shopping, you'd have to put it down differently, wouldn't you?
Yes, it's just that the shopping was just a way to see their family and all the relationships in their family, simply because it gave you something, a present for each member of the family, so there was something that you could talk about with each member of the family.
But that, you don't see the family so much, but you see the shopping.
Yes. See what
that they... enables you to see the shopping.
Yes.
That's the experience, not the family.
Right. Because the shopping is the actually getting... When they speak rapidly, I don't understand them sometimes. Most of the time I can. But if they get going too fast, I can't understand them. And they got going on the towels for their parents, and there are about 6 different sizes of towels that you can buy. There's a bath towel, and then there's a face towel, and then there's what you call a fingertip towel. It's about this big and has a fringe on the end, and then there's a washcloth, and so that there are 4 sizes, and they had to get the right monogram on all 4 sizes, and that was a little difficult because they were on sale, so they were on a sale table, and they were going through the piles like this, and then they'd run out of one letter, and I'd go get the girl in the back and tell her what letter we needed. We needed a W in this size, and she'd go in the back and bring it out. Only they got one of Marie's mother's name is Marguerite, so they were trying to get M. And they got one W because she handed it to them upside down. And the W is just the M upside down. So they got one W in there. Stuck by mistake. Too bad. Well, they had to get something that wouldn't break that they could mail, too. That was part of it.
Were the mail these all separately?
I guess so. They can't mail them all together. They'll mail them separately. And they
could wrap them separately and mail them all in one package.
I don't know how they'll do it. They can't mail them in France either because there's a postal strike. They haven't had any mail for a month because the post office is on strike, so they send their mail through Belgium because somebody who works for Marie's mother lives in Belgium. They just live over the border from Belgium. So one of her employees works in Belgium, and they send all their mail to him, and he brings it across the border to France. There's always somebody on strike in France, always. The entire time I was in France, somebody in the post office was on strike. Either the mail stampers, or the mail sorters, or the mail carriers. Well, somebody was on strike the whole 7 months. It might not be in the village, or it might be the village post office would be on strike and the one in Nice wouldn't be. or the one in Nice would be and the one in the Village wouldn't be. Or they wouldn't be on strike either place there, but they'd be on strike in Paris. Somebody was on postal strike the whole time I was there.
Well, what was that little thing on Mr. Eastman about that I did?
The stove. That was as close as you could get to the experience of fixing the stove with him, and going through the store, going through the whole telephone call to get that one little part that you needed for the bottom, the vent on the bottom that had to have holes in it for the air to go in. As close as you could get to that, and if you hadn't kept pushing him about it, he'd never have said that about the part that was missing. Well, you didn't push him exactly, but he said, maybe it's that, and you said, what's that? And then he brought it up, that was the part you were probably missing.
That's the name of it. That was the part. Well, Debbie, I kind of forget now. There's several things, you see, that there was an experience I've actually forgotten. There was the experience of Mr. Eastman up here where I was working through finding out about the stove. And then there was a parallel experience down there where he was working, fixing the fence.
That's
for Mr. Palmer. And I had to keep him at it up here. Mr. Palmer wasn't even out there. He kept himself at it out there. He gave himself a heart attack. That's, of course, that's a little extreme, but it's not. It's still true. So the experience, sort of a double experience,
mm-hmm.
with a stove.
The stove, and then what he reports about
Mr. Palmer.
On Mr. Palmer while he's doing the stove.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, while he's working this out on this thing, that leads up to the fix it, the name in the part, and then I take it to the telephone. But it's just the same. It's still just the same thing. You lead up to the name, and then the name leads you to finding the part.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes you through Sears, you might say. It's got several little interests in it, and it. Now you see, if I'd had to construct that myself, I never could have constructed that. It did itself. Then, with Mr. Palmer, that is just his talk. That's the talk. Now, part of the talk didn't pertain. Part of it was on getting the land.
Mm-hmm.
But the part on the fence was the one. So this experience, and then his reported experience, enabled me to see how he works for me and how he works for Mr. Palmer. But it's the experience.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at the experience. You're looking at it. Now, you can leave Mr. Palmer out, if you want to, and still see how he works for me.
Yeah, just leave out the whole parallel thing.
The only thing is that experience of Mr. Palmer points it. Once you get that, you see, you don't have to write an essay.
Yeah.
So you're looking at the nature of experience.
experience as close as you can get to reality. I have a feeling reality is not the word. The experience is close as you can get to your relations with the community or something.
Yeah.
It runs in some sort of abstraction. Let me tell you, you know, you've done this before. You have talked out an experience, and all you need to do is just sit down the typewriter.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been able to do that. What you told me, you could put on an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, not quite an hour.
Hour and a half?
Two.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, I can put it down.
It's a pleasure. I mean, it's a pleasure to look at it as you put it down, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Once you get a hold of it, a little toehold, once you get a little, make a little contact with it, you see, well, it's something special. That's all you need. It doesn't matter what point you made. It doesn't matter. It ought to be interesting. And what it does, you see, it enables you to go through the whole process if you want to, in its great detail, and is luxurious and all, and stick old Ruffin in, you see. Is that good Presbyterian? And look what happened to her. Episcopal. Eating yourself sick. At his stage. He ate three or four meals in one, didn't he?
He did.
All of them special.
Mm-hmm.
But that special will get you to it, won't it? He couldn't resist them.
Yeah. Nobody could.
You see, I'll never get very close to that. This is as close as I'll ever get. But I enjoy this distance. You gotta chew it up and swallow it.
Well, I'll do the chewing.
Wanna hear it back?
Well,
you don't need to.
I don't need to.
Let me see if it's working.
Channel 1 over, and the end of the visit with Debbie this Sunday afternoon, 24th of November, 74. Channel 1 over, and around 700 or 800, and the end of the visit with Debbie this Sunday afternoon, 24th of November, 74. Channel 1 over, around 700 or 800, and the end of the visit with Debbie this Sunday afternoon, the 24th of November, 74.